You know, oh, it's the start of something, hopefully.
Is the Garibaldi Gazette, a podcast about two-time European champions Nottingham Forest. On this episode, Ryan Yates loving, better but beaten by City, and Sheffield United. Ugh. Referring the independent panel to an independent panel, this is the Garibaldi Gazette. And we're back with you once again for our weekly chat about all things Forest. Hope you're well, listener. Thanks for joining us. And remember that you can leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. That'll help other Reds fans find us. You can follow us on X at the Garibaldi G, on Instagram at the Garibaldi Gazette, and the same handle on YouTube. I have two Forest experts with me today. It's a warm welcome back from holiday to Nick Miller. How you doing, Nick?
I'm back, yes. I didn't go far enough away to avoid the Everton fallout and the tweet, which you know very skillfully covered in my absence, but it was lovely to have a break.
Nick's going to a Sopranos quiz tonight, and I'm not going to make a comparison between Tony and Evangelos Marinakis, lest I get myself in trouble. Instead, I'll introduce our next guest. Back with us again is the always excellent Steve Wright. You okay, Steve?
Yeah, good, thanks, glad to be back. A bit jealous of holidays, looking forward to one.
Yeah, same. Very much so. I think we're all ready for the end of the season by now, but with Forest in the Premier League, hopefully. And we're going to start today with something lovely. I've subtitled this section of the pod, Ryan Yates is Lovely. This week, as you might have seen, Forest released a video celebrating the wonder that is Yatesy after he made his 200th Forest appearance at the weekend. His teammates and supporters said nice things about him, so we didn't want to miss out on the fun. Nick, we've done a lot of criticising of the club in recent episodes, but just this video I thought was genuinely heartwarming. The words from his teammates, the words from supporters, and mainly his reaction to it.
I mean, if Forest did get relegated, the heartwarming content that Forest had put out this season could genuinely be the highlight of the whole season. There's the Spanish kid who loved Alanga. Is it Vera? The old lady's name? That was great. And yeah, this was absolutely wonderful. And it kind of confirmed, it was quite a relief really that he does actually seem to be a genuinely lovely bloke, because if he turned out not to be, then that would be quite crushing. Of all the kind of various very nice things that his teammates were saying about him, Morgan Gibbs-White was my favourite, I think, where he was talking about him, Yates being a kind of very lovely man off the pitch, and then on the pitch he's an absolute menace, which is I think confirms what we probably all thought of him really.
I wonder sometimes, Steve, if we may be slightly over-egged the importance of having academy graduates in the team, but I do feel it's a bit different with Yates. Steve Cooper called him a culture setter, and it's not just about having somebody who's come through the club and knows about it, but somebody who is keen to share that information with other people and set standards around the training ground. Maybe he's not a 9 out of 10 player every week, but you can't really put a price on the commodity of having somebody who can bring that to a football club.
Yeah, it's funny in a way. It doesn't strike you necessarily immediately as that kind of leader character, does he? But he definitely sets the tone. And yeah, that's a huge part of football at the end of the day. It's to have somebody who's going to say, whatever happens, we're keeping fighting, we're going aggressive, we're going with pace, we're keeping at it. That kind of cultural tone to a football team is really important. And it brings so much more than just the technical side. Obviously, you need the technical side. You need all of that, especially at this level where the technical ability of players is so much higher than kind of as it was in the Championship when he first came through. But it just gives you that tone to the side that means that whatever the scenario, we're always going to be giving it our best shout. And what more can you ask? And I mean, I do overplay academy players, let's face it, but he brings a lot more than just that. And it's just great that he's absolutely rooted in this club.
And you'd think that he'd be a stick on to play against Sheffield United, given the kind of game that's going to be. We will get to that later. Just to let you know, as we record, it is 9 minutes past 11 on Wednesday, the 1st of May. Not the ideal time if you're waiting for an appeal verdict to come in. If it happens while we're recording, great. If not, that's why you heard a little voice note from me at the top of the pod. So let's move on to something else, which is... an independent panel has said we should have had one penalty against Everton, specifically for Ashley Young's foul on Hudson-Odoi in the 55th minute. The key match incident panel is independent and made up of three former players or coaches, one Premier League representative and one from the PGMOL. They said it was felt unanimously that a penalty should have been awarded and VAR should have intervened on the basis that Young doesn't make any contact on the ball and that there is evidence that his contact with Hudson-Odoi has the consequence of tripping the attacker. And Steve, that's, I don't know, nice to know, I suppose, but also, what's the point of this? What are we hoping to get from it?
I've managed to be spectacularly frustrated by every single party in this whole setup. I'm frustrated with the referees, with the people that oversee the referees, with the Premier League, with Forest, fans who are still banging on about how there's a conspiracy against us. The whole thing is just horrible. There is a way through it. No, I say there's a way through it. There is a way that I think that they should go. It won't solve anything because that's the nature of the Premier League. Nothing ever gets solved. But, I mean, I agree with them in a sense. I kind of said at the time, I thought it was one penalty. I thought the other two, although you can make a case for them, you could also make a decent case against them as well, whereas the third one was just, you couldn't, it was a definite penalty. There was no doubt about it, and it should have been reviewed and it should have been given. But I wish we could just... kind of put aside now the pantomime of it, the soap opera side of the whole argument, and just try to find a way forward. And this is where I think Forrest could really do something real around this notion of having a value-based club. You know, we took this Rebel City stuff that's being thrown around, which really annoys me because I don't think we're acting like a Rebel City. I think we're acting like children squabbling. But if we want to go down that route, let's put a plan out there for ways of making things better instead of just crying about how, you know, the referee is a Luton fan. You know, there is a much more positive conversation that we could be having and we could be pushing within the authorities. We are the Premier League. You know, we're one of 20 parts of the Premier League. So let's stop railing against it and join in and take ownership of our place and say, right, this is what we need to do and show some leadership within the group. And I know what those things would be to me, and I know they're probably not going to happen, but they'd start with getting rid of VAR. Just clear the whole thing away and put the power back in the hands of the referee at the game, you know, with the match going on. Put it back in the ground where everybody knows what's going on. Accept that mistakes are going to be made, but when they are made, let's have a proper review of them, proper assessment of referees that supports them in developing them to be better, but also... means that if they're constantly making mistakes and there's some form of pulling away and they go and do something to develop and improve before they come back. But let's do it as a sensible conversation instead of a sort of everybody going into their factions and sort of squabbling about it.
Sensible conversation is not really part of the brand of the Premier League. Nick, is this just arse covering from PGMOL, or is the benefit for Forest, which is a weird thing to say, but does it make Chris Kavanagh and Michael Salisbury, who are the referee and VAR at Bramall Lane on Saturday, does it have any impact on how they will approach the game?
I don't think it'll have any particular impact on how they approach the game. I mean, it's all part of the need to like appear to be transparent about how these decisions are made. That Howard Webb seems to be kind of fairly obsessed with, and presumably he's obsessed with it because clubs are saying, well we want explanations of all these things. But there is this kind of this idea that once a decision is explained and once, you know, a panel or whatever have looked at it and said, yeah, that was wrong, that was right, that would be the kind of end of everything. But what it actually does is just gives, as Steve kind of touched on, it just gives it a tail. It allows the sort of simmering sense of injustice to continue, and it allows people to whine about it even further. And from that perspective, I kind of agree with you, Matt, that it's a bit of a waste of time, really. I don't think it's not going to satisfy anyone, because everyone else won't care, and the Forest fans will go, well, yes, of course. Well, there you go. There's proof that there's injustice. Sorry, I'll clarify. The Forest fans that will think this anyway will just go, yeah, this is proof that there is a plot against us and yada, yada, yada. Just on that, the match incident panel, I wrote something about this relatively recently, and I thought it was quite funny that last season, Stephen Reed was part of that panel. And he obviously had to recuse himself now that he works for a Premier League club. And it's just quite funny that he was part of this panel when he banned for family podcast. So we won't use the words that he used to the referee. Which game was it? I can't remember. It was the Liverpool game, wasn't it? So yeah, it's all... I find the sort of relitigating of refereeing decisions incredibly boring. I generally don't really have much kind of patience with people who complain about punditry and so on, because it's not a vital part of the game. You can just turn it off. If you don't like what people are saying, you can go and do something else with your time. But it irritates me beyond measure when someone on Match of the Day or Sky or something like that will open a section of punditry by saying, well, we have to talk about the penalty decision after 20 minutes or something. You don't. You can just talk about, unless literally nothing else has happened, you can just talk about the interesting parts of the game rather than going over refereeing decisions, which is completely pointless. So, yeah, the whole thing's a sort of extension of that, really. Just a very boring part of the game that I wish did not exist.
Yeah, try and get it right in the moment. If you don't, just move on. My mind is cast back to that brilliant Roberto De Zerbi quote after he got in a huff about a Brighton decision and then got a visit from Howard Webb the next week. And he said, if you want to come to me to have a meeting, you want me to lose 2 hours of my time, of my work, you have to have a different attitude on the pitch. If you want to improve football, they have to be with another attitude. Only this. Quite Roberto. All right. Well, Forest showed a better attitude when they played Manchester City. We'll have a look back on that next. Well, they gave it a really good go, didn't they, against the champions? But sadly, Chris Wood et al. Left their shooting boots in March. David Marples was at the World Famous. Let's hear him look back on the game, sort of, and ahead to Saturday, a bit.
My favourite JFK conspiracy theory? Well, where to start? How about Umbrella Man? A man with an umbrella, looking shady, who blew a poison dart out the end from 60 yards away with pinpoint accuracy? And what the hell was a bloke doing with an umbrella on such a hot day, eh? Answer me that. I mean, yeah, he might have been creating some shade for himself with a brolly under the hot dollar sun, I guess. But this kind of umbrella stuff actually happened in England, on Waterloo Bridge in 1978. Poison darts, umbrellas and all, genuinely. Let's not rule out Lyndon Baines Johnson, either. Wait, you mean the Vice President? Yeah, him. The Vice President, who was two cars behind in the motorcade and would obviously benefit from the actual President being killed. In fairness, he couldn't have just took out a gun and shot JFK himself, what with all the crowds and stuff, but you know who could? The driver, William Greer, could. Yep, he could. So, obviously, LBJ could have struck a deal with Greer, who, if you squint at the Zapruder footage, stick it in the wash, burn it, play it backwards, and then watch something else, you can just about make out Greer reaching into the glove compartment and taking out... Yeah, forget about it. And what about Babushka woman? After all, what possible motive could she have for being elderly, wearing a headscarf, and taking pictures of the President while he passed through the city? I mean, you know, surely she cannot be ruled out. And then there's this guy called Lee Harvey Oswald, clearly in deep cahoots with Cubans, Russians, communists, and possibly even Umbrella Man, Babushka, LBJ, and William Greer, all at the same time. Or maybe, like he claimed, before Jack Ruby went and performed arguably the century's most rash decision, Oswald was simply a patsy, there to conveniently and simply, well, be there. In the wrong place, at the wrong time, to take a hiding for the benefit and pleasure of a bigger, murkier, nameless and faceless juggernaut. Not entirely unlike Forest Troll on Sunday. Or at least, that was how it felt as the weekend approached. From Big TV's perspective, the title race was getting rather spicy. It was really all about City apparently trampling their way over the prone body that was now Liverpool and standing smugly next to Arsenal with a big knowing grin. But it was different for us. We may have been a patsy for most of the watching millions, but at least it would be nice if we kicked up a fuss, spoke out, and made it difficult for the immaculate machine. And we did. We gave them a game. We made them sweat a bit. They got a bit ruffled, they fell out of each other and got all stroppy about the pitch. The pitch, Pep. It's a pitch, mate. Come on, mate. Just grass, innit? Short of chalking up a miracle, the performance was perhaps the best reasonable outcome we could have expected. Yeah, I know, 1-1 last season and all that, but you don't see Haaland have a shocker like he did last season twice. It just wasn't going to happen again. So to not just get them worried and stay in the game, but to be an actual attacking threat while keeping them at arm's length was pretty satisfying. No, it wasn't a win and we didn't even get a point. But we did come away with the belief that we could play football quite well again, which, given the next 3 weeks, was pretty welcome. And Ola Aina metamorphosising into a version of Stuart Pearce with a ballet certificate was doubly welcome. Oh, dear listener, it's nearly here. The first of two fixtures that have elicited a silent Munchian scream within me since the fixtures were published. Bramall Lane. They'd love it, if they could make us squeal, wouldn't they? It's going to take every single sinew being strained to its most extreme to come away with something. If any sinews are not snapped and hanging out of socks by the full-time whistle, I'll be not angry, just disappointed. It's going to be a brutally long week and an even longer and brutal Saturday. But until then, not so much of a patsy after all. Not Patsy Cline, not Patsy Kensit, not even Patsy Parisi, but something meaningful and purposeful on our own terms. For now, at least. Until Saturday comes, at least. And it'll come. I mean, stuff will happen between now and then. This is Nottingham Forest, after all. But Saturday is, well, may well be definitive. And a win would be akin to a truly magical bullet.
Oh, well, I'm with David here, Nick. Once it goes to 1-0, a glorious defeat was probably the best thing that we could have hoped for. But man, we could have been 2 or 3-0 up by that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, we may end this season with a long list of nearly goals by Murillo. There was the one where he ran through the whole team against Crystal Palace, the various times when he's tried to lob the keeper from inside his own half. And then that kind of judo kick thing that he tried to pull off and it kind of looked over and then kind of Chris Wood with his feet on the wrong way around, choosing a very bad time to do that. But yeah, I mean, for all I've been frustrated with Nuno in the last sort of few months, it worked, didn't it? The kind of three at the back and while kind of retaining the... It was basically the system he sort of used to play at Wolves, but with Gibbs White as the sort of Ruben Neves figure and three at the back and two wingers, in theory, to do something on the counter-attack. And it kind of worked. And it would have worked if, you know, some of those relatively simple chances had gone in. So I don't think he would have... The old, if you'd have offered me scoreline X at the start, I don't think I would have taken losing a game, but it was about the sort of best that you could realistically have expected. It's one of those things where I believe people who know more about this than I do say that the Forest's underlying numbers are very good, and the implication there being that eventually we'll start scoring goals and winning games, but sort of running out of games for all that to kind of pay off now. Admittedly, the you wouldn't be particularly surprised if Forest won their last, you know, three remaining games, given the opposition in all of them. But it was kind of encouraging, really, if deflating that, you know, we conceded another goal from a corner and then maybe not quite when it just looked like we were coming back into the game, City scored, but after having had those chances and it could quite easily have been at the very least level when Erling Haaland came on. Frustrating in all those respects, but I felt weirdly positive after the game, despite having lost, because of the way Forest played, particularly in the sort of kind of middle bit of the first half, which is when those chances came and Hudson-Odoi looked really sort of threatening on the left, and Ola Aina had a really good game. So yeah, quite sort of weirdly encouraged despite Forest losing.
Mm. Yeah, what was particularly encouraging, I think, Steve, was to see that Nuno does have the ability to change things. And You know, he is clearly a more attack-minded manager than Steve Cooper. I think that's fair to say. Forest had 14 shots in this game, but they also managed to contain City for large parts of it. Obviously, we conceded from a corner because that's what we do every week. But there's been a lot of accusations against Nuno that, you know, that he's a bit one-dimensional as a manager, but it's encouraging that he was able to effect change for this game.
Yeah, definitely. Kind of a little bit wary of saying we were the better team when we lost 2-0. You know, it doesn't feel quite right, does it? But in lots of aspects, we were more energetic. We were more on the front foot. We played with better pace than them, better tempo. We created better chances than them, but we conceded two fairly straightforward goals to a team that didn't really seem to be getting going. They seemed to be almost playing at a walking pace at times. But from our perspective, the way we went about the game was very, very positive. I mean, I thought Aina was fantastic. And what a signing he's been as well, to be fair. You know, I mean, we look at the recruitment at times, it was a terrific piece of recruitment. We looked well balanced, we looked well shaped. The midfield pairing worked really well together. They seemed to have a good connection, play off each other well, perhaps ran out of a bit of energy later on, but certainly played well for a large portion of the game. If I was going to have a caveat, and it seems like you've got to have one of those when you're a Forest fan, don't you? Sometimes it feels like we manage to play to just the level that's not quite good enough to beat whoever we're playing. So, you know, we play a really, really good team like City, Liverpool, Arsenal, you know, and we're just not quite able to beat them, but we feel like we played really well and that was really positive and encouraging. And then we play a team that we think we ought to roll over and we again play not quite well enough to beat them again, whether it's a Burnley or a Luton at home or whatever. So the fear is that we seem to have a level that is not consistent, but is consistently just slightly below where we'd like it to be in any given game. And that's got to be a concern. That's why we're fourth from bottom in the league, in what is effectively a league with three teams that probably aren't good enough to be in the Premier League at this point in time, and we're four above that. Having said that, all those positive things, what they do make you think is that it's not a giant leap to that group of teams that's in mid-table. You know, we're not far away. If we could just add a little bit of consistency and perhaps a touch more quality, and, you know, so if we stay in this league this year, it doesn't feel like it's a, you know, a 25 signing move to get to the next point. It's a little bit of quality to add into a really good core and a bit of consistency in the way that we play and approach things that could just actually make us a very different season in terms of the way we feel about it, that we're not fighting relegation. We're in that batch that are a kind of mid-table Premier League group, which would be a very positive place to be at this stage.
And maybe say to that fella Rusk, hey, I hear you're pretty good at set pieces. We're having a bit of a sticky time defending them. Maybe you could help us out a little. Nick, we've only won 5 home league games all season. It was 8 last season. Chelsea is the final game of the season at the City Ground. I mean, depends if we get points back, if we beat Sheffield United. But that's got to be 1, probably 3 points. We don't want to be going to Burnley with anything on that.
No, it'll be A, horrific, and B, very dangerous, if, you know, because at the moment Burnley look like they might still be in it at that point. We kind of assumed that, you know, a few weeks ago we not quite writing off, but I think a lot of people sort of assumed, oh, well, you know, Burnley on the last day, they'll be relegated by then, so that will be easy enough. But they have recovered and they look like they might be back into it. I said this on our WhatsApp group the other day, that I am choosing to be extremely positive and emit a sort of wildly optimistic sort of expectation of how things might pan out this weekend. We are recording this before we know the verdict to the appeal for the points deduction. Let's say Forest get 1 or 2 points back from that, which I think is probably unlikely, but it might happen. And then, you know, Luton and Burnley lose this weekend, which is perfectly likely. Forest beat Sheffield United, which again is perfectly likely, effectively safe by that point. And it would be slightly like Arsenal the end of last season, when it was a couple of weeks out. We all thought, well, this either we're going down or this is at least going to go right down to the last day. And, you know, Crystal Palace away is going to be absolutely horrible. Then we beat Arsenal and it was almost unexpectedly, oh, we're fine. What were we worried about? We can just relax for the last couple of weeks of the season. And it might be the case Again, I'm seeing some skeptical looks on the other end of the Zoom here. I'm not sure that everyone's fully on board with that, but you know, it could happen. We might have not quite all have been worried for nothing, but there is a sort of mild chance that it could all be sort of sorted this weekend-ish, sort of maybe.
Well, this weekend is Sheffield United away. Let's talk about that next after we hear one of those delightful little stings. Sheffield United, not a team we like very much historically, and one that have been almost historically bad this season. Still you occupying top spot in that regard, Derby, I'm afraid. We see you celebrating getting back into the league we're trying to stay out of with your silly little second place trophy. Where was I? Sheffield United. The weekend's legal dogfighting action at the wrong end of the table in the Premier League. Steve, once again, before we get to our game, Luton play before us. They're at home to Everton on Friday night. I'm a bit worried about that because Everton are now safe and Luton surely aren't going to lose all their remaining games. Burnley hosting Newcastle, same time as us. Burnley are in form, but Newcastle got plenty to play for and they're doing well as well. Are you one of those that focuses on the other results, or is it all about what we do?
It's definitely all about what we do. I think you can create whatever narrative you want to do, can't you, according to your personality type. So there is a very definite way of painting a picture where we go down, and there's a very definite way of painting a picture where we stay up. I mean, I kind of look at it and I think we're in a three-team little mini league with three games to go, and we're starting at the top of it with the best three games to play. So I wouldn't swap any of it with anybody else in this sort of battle that we're in. I can see how Luton will look at the Everton game and think it's a possible win, but I think they'll also be looking at it and thinking they've got to win it. You know, the pressure is on them to win that game because going to West Ham is not going to be an easy ask. You look at Burnley's games and you'd be very surprised if they've got any extra points by the time we go to play them. I mean, again, it's possible, but I think we kind of sometimes over-egg what the opposition is going to do. You know, they're all down there for a reason. To suddenly pull out wins against Newcastle and Spurs, that's a big ask of a Burnley side that still have a tendency, even when it's playing well, to make some silly mistake that costs points. Luton, I've been really impressed with. I like them more than I kind of almost want to. In many ways, you know, if it wasn't us, if we'd swapped places with Everton, I'd be cheering Luton on and hoping that they stayed up. I think it'd be a great story. But realistically, they often do well without picking up points. They, you know, that's why they're there as well. So why are they suddenly going to win, you know, two out of three or whatever at the end of the season? I think we can over-egg that. So I still think if we go to Sheffield United and win, I'm ignoring the points deduction side of things and just assume that that stays as is. If we go and beat Sheffield United, we're a big step of the way there. And much as I can look at Sheffield United and think, oh, they loathe us, don't they? Wouldn't they love to put a spanner in our works and look at all those players they've got? Like, wouldn't Jack Robinson love to sort of take us down with him? And they've obviously got Osborne and they've got Brereton and everything else as well. But we should be going to Sheffield United and winning. I mean, you know, off the back of that Man City game, we should be going there confident, aggressive. We should be on the front foot. They don't win games of football. We should be knocking them down. And even if they score, we should just keep getting up and going back at them because they will concede goals. So if we take the right attitude into these three games, I still think we stay up. And I don't think the other teams pick up lots and lots more points. I still think 30 probably does it.
Yeah, just on Sheffield United are rubbish. They've lost their last four, conceding at least 4 goals in three of those. They've only won twice at home all season by the odd goal against Wolves and Brentford, and not in 2024. Overall, they've played 17, won 2, drawn 4, lost 11 in the league at Bramall Lane, conceded 51 league goals there, 14 more than next worst Burnley, and they're three away from conceding 100 in the league, home and away. All that said, Nick, Forrester got some concerns coming into this game with what Bolly, Murillo, and Williams all having gone off against City. You put those down as three starters, wouldn't you? So that does change things a bit.
If everyone's fit, I'd be quite surprised if the starting 11 changed. I know we talked about Yates, and it feels like a kind of tailor-made game for him, but that system worked against City. So, you know, while we're going from probably the best team in the league to the worst, and you may want to adjust accordingly, but I don't really see why, a particular reason why Nuno would change shape particularly. Of those three, I mean, we're not entirely sure yet because Nuno hasn't sort of spoken to the media ahead of this game yet, so we don't quite know what the situation is. But I would guess that Williams is the most likely of those three to not be fit, which I suppose is the most replaceable in as much as Montiel can play there or Aina could switch over and Toffolo comes in on the left. Not a fan of Montiel, as you unfortunately discovered by making the mistake of being the same WhatsApp group with me. Sorry about that again. But yeah, if Murillo's injury is kind of serious, there's the sort of real possibility that that might be the last time we've seen him, which will be quite sad, really. It'll be one of those kind of strange, you sort of half suspect it, but one of those strange things in 5-10 years' time when people go, Murillo,
Did he really play for Forest?
Be like, it's sort of the Teddy Sheringham syndrome, where obviously we remember him playing for Forest, but no one else does. It was quite, it was sort of reassuring to have Bolly back in there. He's quite a reassuring presence. So if he's injured and not able to play, that'll be a bit of a blow. But yeah, I suspect that if everyone is fit, or if it's just a case of kind of bringing Montiel in for Williams, and I don't think that there will be much change to the starting 11. You mentioned, not obviously Forest won't need any extra motivation, but to score three goals, being the team that scored the 100th goal past Sheffield United, the only other time that that's happened in the Premier League is Swindon, and that was in a 42-game season. So if Sheffield United concede 100 goals in what would be 36 games, that would, you know, I'm sure we're supposed to kind of rise above petty rivalries, but that would be incredibly funny.
Yeah, football's not much without petty rivalries, so let's keep stoking this one. Interesting game, Steve, obviously, for Morgan Gibbs-White, once of Sheffield United, missed his pen, didn't he, in the playoff semi-final. He feels to me like one of those players who does better once you get his back up a little bit. So maybe the Sheffield United supporters can do us a favour there.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a... You would think that despite their kind of obvious disappointment at going down, you're never quite sure how teams respond to that, are you? You know, does it relieve pressure or does it kind of just mean that the season's over and they kind of give up? But I would imagine the Sheffield United fans will try and make an effort to rouse themselves for this one and try to stoke their team up a bit. And that could well play favourably for us. It could well mean that, you know, a game that encourages us to kind of fight back and to go a bit toe-to-toe with a side that, you know, isn't good enough for this level and doesn't have the quality that we have. We should be able to impose ourselves if we can get that attitude right and use that kind of a bit of motivation to basically do what they're going to try to do to us, but do it back to them and be the team that comes out on top. It's also unpredictable, isn't it? But you know, we should be going there full of confidence. And it, whatever happens, it shouldn't take any of that. We've got every motivation ourselves, haven't we? We should be going there to finish a job and to finally relieve ourselves of this torturous season.
It really can't end quickly enough, can it? Nick, you don't like Gonzalo Montiel. Neither do I. Google it if you're wondering why we don't listen. Now, I'm also not very keen on Chris Wilder, which means that I'm going to be all the more disappointed when he's appointed as our manager in November when we're ninth in the Championship. It just feels like he's destined to be Forest manager at some point.
Yeah, there was... I can't remember if it was how far down the line it was, but there was... He'd sort of looked like the most logical choice when we appointed Cooper at the time. And mixed feelings about that one.
His stock's fallen pretty far this season though, right? Because I mean, I know they haven't got the squad equipped to stay up, but they almost look worse than they did under Heckingbottom.
I mean, before this season as well, he was kind of didn't do anything. Middlesbrough had that weird sort of 6 months or whatever it was at Watford. The only way that he was going to get a... you would think even a top half Championship job was someone with a sort of emotional attachment to him. And you know, while there is obviously the emotional attachment to him, it did look like a very we're giving him a few months run up for the championship promotion campaign when the Sheffield United appointed him, rather than a let's get someone in to try and keep us in this league sort of thing. But yeah, there is a sort of bleak inevitability. Although there have been a few, I always thought there was a sort of bleak inevitability that Neil Warnock would be our manager at some point, which nearly happened. I can't remember who it was who got the job in the end, but it was
it was Fawaz time.
Was in the Fawaz era, and it was sort of in that kind of Dougie. No, maybe it was a little bit after Dougie Friedman type era. That was, oh god, I've just slipped into a kind of depressive funk remembering those years. I know we talk a lot about, and rightly so, we talk a lot about Forza and how they kind of reignited some kind of enthusiasm for Forest. But that was in the sort of post Stuart Pearce, pre Forza really getting going. Those kind of 2 or 3 years were the real kind of low points for me. Even maybe not quite as low as League One, but that was when my enthusiasm for Forest was at its kind of lowest point, because it just seemed completely pointless, the whole thing. And that's the sort of, as this season has shown, being in the Premier League is not a guarantee of enjoyment. The main thing, I suppose, that makes me want Forest to stay up is that we don't kind of slip into that sort of, you know, trying to get excited about Preston away and on a November afternoon and finishing somewhere between 8th and who cares in the Championship every year. That's the sort of thing that you want to get away from as much as possible.
Was totally listening to that, but I did also bring up the Wikipedia page for the 2016-17 Championship season, obviously. Can you believe that none of these people have ever managed Forest yet? Steve Bruce, Paul Heckingbottom, Tony Mowbray, Dean Smith, Lee Johnson, Nigel Clough, Neil Warnock, Slavisa Jokanovic, David Wagner, Gary Monk, Daniel Farker, Simon Grayson, Ian Holloway, Carlos Carvajal, Paul Cook and Paul Lambert. I mean, take your pick. Any of those could have and probably will be manager.
Gary Monk feels like the obvious one that if you're not a Forest fan and you say, did Gary Monk manage Forest? You kind of go, yeah, I mean, probably. It feels like he's almost has a sort of national service where he gets 6 months at every kind of as was mid-level championship club with ideas above the station kind of thing.
The notion of that thing about who's going to be our manager in November, though. But this is probably not a conversation for now. This is probably a conversation for a future pod. But Nuno hasn't really set everybody alight in terms of excitement and connection and everything else. But the thing that really worries me about the whole management situation and probably the lack of forethought and oversight of these sorts of decisions is that we keep him at the end of the season solely to see what he does in the first 5 games of next season, and then we throw it all back up in the air again and start again with somebody else. So I hope somebody at the club is having a little thought about, is this the guy to lead us through next season, or do we need to make a change now before we start that season so that we don't end up with another, you know, series of games where we're umming and ahhing about whether we need to sack another manager and start again and think about who we might replace him with. It's one of those where I don't know that I'm that bothered which way they go on it, but I just want somebody to make a decision and say either this is the guy or this isn't the guy, and we go forward with that in mind and don't change our minds after a couple of unfortunate results in the fixture list at the beginning of next season.
Any chance, Nick, that he takes that decision out of our hands and says, you know what, sod this, you lot are absolutely nuts? I mean, we haven't warmed to him, but he's had an awful lot to deal with, right?
Yeah.
A normal functioning football club would not be expected to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's stating the obvious. It's much more likely that he stays, assuming it's his decision, it's much more likely that he stays if we are in the Premier League, because that's the kind of sort of almost depressing, is it? I thought about this week when those stories about Julen Lopetegui, and seemingly the two possible destinations for him next season are West Ham and AC Milan. And as, you know, we're all of a kind of loosely similar age and kind of grew up watching football when Milan were this kind of untouchable glamour club that operated on an entirely different plane to even the best clubs in England, never mind kind of mid-level, slightly depressing clubs in England. But this sort of the power of a Premier League job, there's the money thing, obviously, but it's also incredibly prestigious to the point where many people would take a Premier League job over a lot of other, in theory, bigger and more glamorous options. So from that perspective, he will presumably want to stay. But yeah, if we get relegated, then it's perfectly possible that he just says, sod this, I can, there are much easier ways of making a living than this.
Well, we shall see. If he beats Sheffield United on Saturday, things will look a lot rosier for Forrest. That's for sure. You can't watch it on UK TV, but maybe that's a good thing. We will reflect on whatever happens next week. And we are nearly done for today. But because Arsha's not here, it means we get to do a quiz, which could be a good thing, could be a bad thing. Let's find out, shall we, with our host, Nick Miller.
It's almost like a little sort of naughty schoolboy that the teacher's away, and the evil teacher who doesn't like quizzes is away, so let's do a quiz.
So we are so sad, aren't we? I mean, what a nerdy way to rebel.
Yeah. We love you, Asha. Come back soon. So, yes, it was kind of partly inspired by the heartwarming Ryan Yates content, which was obviously in celebration of his 200th appearance for Forest. I'm going to do a version of Play Your Cards Right here. Which is just, we're going to go back and forth between you two. I'm going to read you out a former Forest player, and you're going to tell me whether he's made more appearances than Ryan Yates or fewer. And then obviously we'll go on to, I'll give you the number of, when you've had your guess, I'll give you the number. Then we'll go on to the next player, and you have to guess whether they've made more or fewer appearances for Forest than that guy. So, as a little twist, a little spicy little twist, there was one combination here where they have made exactly the same number of appearances. There's only one. So really, you're guessing whether they've made more, fewer, or exactly the same. But remember, there is only one of those combinations. So I'm going to start with Steve. So yeah, Ryan Yates has made 200 appearances for Forest. The player that you have to guess is Alan Rogers. Has he made more, fewer, or exactly the same number of appearances as Ryan Yates? I should say that all of these, I haven't gone like, you know, stupidly far either way. They're all quite sort of relatively close.
I'll put an immediate disclaimer that I'm useless at things like this. However, I know he had two phases, but I don't think either of them was particularly long. So I'm going to say fewer.
Incorrect. He made 200.
I was useless at these things.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't beat yourself up too much. He made 206 appearances for Forest.
Oh, blimey. That was
and nice. I forgot he had two spells, so he yeah. Sort of one up on me anyway, Steve.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to go over to Matt now. So Alan Rogers made 206 appearances. Your player is Tony Woodcock. Did he make more, fewer, or exactly the same number of appearances as Alan Rogers on 206?
I'm going to answer in the traditional style of Play Your Cards Right and say lower.
That is correct. It is lower, 176, which I was quite slightly surprised about because he would have been there for the best part of a decade probably when it came through and then left in 82, I think it was, 81, 82. So, yeah. So back to Steve. Tony Woodcock, 176. Your player is David Prutton. More, fewer, or exactly the same?
I don't like quizzes either. I think I should join Arsha, shouldn't I? I can't think how many seasons he actually was in the team for. Was he one of the early ones to leave?
Again, the two spells.
Again, two spells.
Ah, of course, yeah.
The second one rather less illustrious than the first.
It still feels, though, that it could be slightly lower. How many games did we play in a season, though? How many seasons was he here? He probably played most of the games, didn't he? I'm going to go a touch. Oh, higher.
Oh.
No, it was lower.
It was lower, slightly lower, 167.
Oh, it is tight, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so David Prutton, 167. Matt, Dexter Blackstock.
It's got to be lower, hasn't it?
It's not lower, it's more. It is 189.
Wow.
There you go.
Well, we're learning anyway, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Key thing.
This is
we're not winning, this is the joy of this.
Right. Steve, Colin Cooper. And more, exactly the same or fewer
I just
than
want it to be more because Colin Cooper was just a lovely man and a legend, and he really should have played more games for us than Dexter Blackstock. So more, please.
It is more. You are good. Quite right.
He definitely should have had two spells at Forest, by the way, Colin Cooper. How did that happen?
Yeah.
Well, he should never have left in the first spell, should he? That's the problem.
You can chart all our problems back to that decision. Anyway, sorry. Matt Marlon Harewood.
Oh, what a favourite of mine he was. Such a klutz, but also so glorious at times. I reckon he probably had two spells as well, did he? Anyway, I'm going to guess.
I think he did, yeah.
More.
It was a slight sneaker because it was fewer, but it was only three fewer. So he was 210. This is dragging on a bit, but I'm going to plough through until the very end. Steve, Brian Laws, more exactly the same or fewer than Marlon Harewood on 210.
I'm going to say a bit more for Brian Laws.
Ah, now this is my where my
this
sneaky
is the
little
same.
Caveat. Exactly the same. 210 appearances for Brian Laws as well.
Wow.
So I was close. So I was only one out.
Yeah. okay, Matt. Jack Lester.
Jack Lester. I did enjoy watching him win and try to win penalties at the Trent End for a good few years. He's part of the Wales coaching staff now, isn't he? Which caught me by
surprise.
Is
he really?
Yeah.
He had a lovely little short man combo with Robbie Blake for a while, didn't he?
Happy days. Well, not happy days, but days. I am going to say more.
No. Yeah, 191. I haven't been keeping score, by the way, but it's...
I don't think there's been much scoring, to be fair.
Yeah.
Gut instinct says you're not doing brilliantly.
There's been two losers, as far as I'm concerned.
Only a couple more to go, don't worry. Steve, Joe Lolly. Jack Lester's was 191. Joe Lolly.
I would have thought that would be lower.
It is lower. Yes, it is lower. Steve goes out on a high. Last one I've got here. And it is Nathan Tyson.
Wow.
Higher or lower than, remember, we've had the same one. And there's only one of those. So is it higher or lower than 171 for Joe Lolly?
Well, if it was games finished, I know that it would be lower. I am going to say lower than Joe Lolly.
It isn't. It was high. Nathan Tyson played 212 times for Forest.
Which that is crazy.
Not only the injuries, but I kind of, particularly in the sort of Billy Davis spell, I had him as sort of not quite a fringe player, but not a first choice. So I was really surprised by that. So there you go.
I'm really disappointed, in how I did in that quiz, but also that Nathan Tyson didn't have just a couple of games at Mansfield because he's so close. He's done Forest, Derby, Notts, Chesterfield, Alfreton, Grantham, Ilkeston, Long Eaton, and Basford. So just missing Mansfield, really frustrating. Maybe we could call him out of retirement and get him to come on for 5 minutes and then do that thing where he says that his hamstring's gone and he has to go off again. That was a way to fill some time. I'm not sure Steve or myself covered ourselves in much glory there. But anyway, just to reinforce the point, we really like Ryan Yates. And that will bring this week's edition of the Garibaldi Gazette to a close. A reminder, please, if you'd be so kind, leave us a nice review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your pods. It's the best way that you can support us. Follow us on Twitter, now known as X, at the Garibaldi G, on Instagram, at the Garibaldi Gazette, and the same handle on YouTube. We should be back with another show next week. Until then, my thanks to Nick and Steve for their expertise and you for lending us your ears. Back with you again soon. Bye for now.